Our speaker today is Autumn Maxwell. Autumn is an assistant professor at Lipscomb in the social work department. I saw a picture just yesterday or day before on Facebook where, and now I've forgotten her name. I have a little problem remembering names. Grew up at Otter Creek. No, not you, Yolanda. She trained under Yolanda and is going to work for Mending Hearts. Sydney Williamson. Thank you.
Yolanda was at that luncheon as well.
She was. I mean, if that's the model student there of coming from all her background and then ending up with a master's in social work. So this has to have nothing to do with Autumn, but I was talking to my brother yesterday. And he said, it's just words I can't think of. And I said, I can't think of what the machine's called that I have to tell it to set a timer. And I said, but I know it's the name of a friend of mine on Facebook, his wife's name. So I have to pull up Facebook and look up his name to figure out Alexa. So finally I wrote it on a post-it note and taped it on the machine. So so that tells you where I am in life right now. So.
Great tool to do sticky notes. I'm going to pull this up here mostly because my big Bible I don't think is going to fit on the podium without falling off, and set my water there too. So I'm so excited that Paulette asked me to come share with you all today. And just to give a little bit of kind of who I am, So my name is Autumn Maxwell, and my family and I have been here at Otter Creek for almost 3 years now, but we've lived in Nashville many years, I don't know. I went to Lipscomb and then met my husband here in Nashville. We stuck around and stayed, so I guess I've been a Nashville resident since about 99, so it feels like I've been here a long time. And so grateful to be a part of Otter Creek. I think, one of the things when we came here, we thought, oh, it's so big. There's so many people. They're all so involved. Will they even need us? You know, but I will say it's been so welcoming, and there have been so many ways to plug in. And I'm so grateful for that and grateful that it felt like a welcoming space for new people to come and plug in. So thank you all as being part of the family for being welcoming to newcomers. So,
every once in a while we blow a fuse.
Uh-oh, okay. Let me write that down. So my husband and I will celebrate 20 years married this fall, and we have 3 kids. I have a son that is about to start high school in the fall. He'll be 15 in October. Another son, so that was Carter. Then my middle son is Weston. He is wrapping up his 5th grade year and will turn 12 this summer. And then my daughter is Mackenzie, and she'll be 10 here in about a month or so in June. So things are busy at our house, kind of running and going from various events and things. So, but that's just a little bit about kind of me now. I am an assistant professor at Lipscomb in the social work department. I taught adjunct for them for a long time and then came on full-time January of 21. So before that, I've been a medical social worker at the VA, which if any of you are veterans, thank you so much for your service. And then prior to that was a psychiatric social worker at Middle Tennessee Mental Health Institute. So, I've come from kind of an experience of social work and love now being able to work with students like Sydney and so many others, kind of helping them on their journey to becoming a social worker as well. So I consider myself very blessed to be in that arena, giving back to the profession that I love. So I'm gonna rewind my story and kind of, and I'm understanding that's what people come and kind of share their journey or their story. So that's what I'll do today. And my story really is God's story. So I'll say, I've titled it God's Faithfulness. Because as I look back kind of on my life and different points in my life, I think what I always come back to is really highlighting God's faithfulness. as a part of that journey. So a couple of thoughts that I had about that. And just to set the stage, really, so I grew up in a Christian home. I'm from Atlanta originally. And if you're familiar with Decatur or Northlake, I went to Greater Atlanta Christian School. So very much grew up in an environment where faith was a part of our lives. We were, you know, a Christian family. I will say we were probably at the church anytime the doors were open, you know, serving in some sort of capacity. My dad was an elder at the church. And my mom was very involved in, we had a wonderful Wednesdays for Women, where women from the Atlanta inner city would come in and learn, I wouldn't call it crafts, but I'm not sure it was really a trade either. My mom taught basket weaving, and they learned just kind of things like that. Meanwhile, we would be playing with the kids and kind of providing childcare, to also doing mission experiences. We called them teens and mission experiences, time trips. And traveled kind of across the United States, really, Dallas, New Orleans. I came to Nashville twice, did some door knocking in the inner city projects. But what I'll say is, you know, all of that being kind of setting the stage for my faith and it being something that was very important, you know, growing up in my family. So I will also say I think that my faith came very easily. It was easy for me. It always has been something that I've believed in, and I do, I want to say, you know, and I've got some scriptures kind of throughout my notes here, so I'll pull from Ephesians 2, 8 through 10, where we find out that the faith is a gift, and that I really believe that God gave me that gift to say, like, yes. You know, your faith will come easy for you. So I say, for it is by grace you've been saved through faith, and it is not from yourselves. It's the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast, for we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which he prepared in advance for us to do. And so for me, as I reflect on it, I'm so grateful that that God was able to give me this faith. So what I'll do, I'm going to kind of look back. There are about seven key moments that I'll highlight, you know, in terms of my life. And I want to call them Ebenezer stones, you know, as we're familiar in the book of Samuel, where he prays for God to rescue the Israelites from the Philistines. I think they'd just gotten back the Ark of the Covenant maybe at that point. And I was looking it up kind of in preparation for this, and it says, then Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Shen. He named it Ebenezer, saying, thus far the Lord has helped us. So as I'm going to place these kind of Ebenezer stones in front of you, there are about seven of them. This is the way that I'm able to look back and see where the Lord has helped me. And so that really has kind of shaped who I am. So I'll start like way back. Think about the summer that I was 12, and again, as I've said, we were very involved in church, so I was on a beach trip with the sixth grade group from my church, and I was telling my kids this, and they were like, you got to go to the beach with your church? You know, yes, I did, so, but I can recall at the time, it was our children's minister now, he's the preaching minister for the church there. But he had us out on the beach. We were having a devotional, and he asked us to close our eyes. And so there we were, sitting on the beach with our eyes closed. And it was kind of in the evening. It was getting a little dark out, but not too dark where it's kind of creepy with all the crabs and creatures that come out. But there we were, and he was talking about God's love and the dependability of God's love and the faithfulness of God's love. And we could hear the waves crashing, you know, up and down kind of on the shore and have that feeling kind of wash over us and the image and the sound of God's love. And he talked about the constant love of God. And I just remember really connecting to that feeling and that the idea behind it that God's love was always going to be there. You know, there's never really a moment that you can go out on the beach and it's just like completely still water, right? I don't know, maybe occasionally some places, don't get me on that one. But for the most part, you can always, if you're listening intently, you can always find that sound. And so that really resonated with me. So I remember coming back from that trip, and that was when I had kind of made the decision to be baptized. So I'll start with that as kind of one of my Ebenezers. So to me, and I'll pull from Psalm 36:5 in this one, where it says, "Your love, Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies." So I could just sense that love of God in my life. So I'll fast forward a few years and tell a little bit of a story about my family where, and I had mentioned to some of the ladies over here, my parents both went to Lipscomb, graduated from Lipscomb, lived here in Nashville, in fact, on Meadow Lake Drive, if I'm saying it correctly, just down before one of the cross streets. That was their very first house, and she tells me it sold for $29,000. So we've looked it up on Zillow, and I'll just say it wouldn't sell for $29,000 now. I'm like, why did you not save it for me? But anyway, they lived here for about 10 years. In fact, my mom taught second grade at Hermitage Elementary out, kind of past the Hermitage. So, but eventually they moved back to Atlanta where my family, my mom's family was from. And at the time, my dad took over my grandfather's hardware businesses. He had several Ace Hardwares in Atlanta. But there's kind of a sad undertone to this part of the story where big box stores moved in. And in the end, and I'll shorten it for you so I'll spare myself maybe from getting too, too emotional about it, but my dad was forced to auction off his businesses. So there I was. It was the summer I was going to be turning 16. And, part of that, too, I'll say, growing up, then moving back to Atlanta and my mom, actually, and this is very vain when I say all of this, but we built this beautiful home in Atlanta, and we all had our own rooms and bathrooms. I even had a Barbie room, which just shows, like, how much I loved Barbies. I think originally it was intended to be on a laundry, but they said, why would the laundry be on the third, we had a basement, first story, second, anyway. So, and through kind of him losing his businesses, we were and found ourselves kind of in the place where we had to sell the house. And that was something I saw my parents really struggling with. I think it was hard for me for feeling like, here I am, and I was 16, so I thought that was really a big deal for me, and now I'm going, oh, it's okay, Autumn, like, you'll be fine. But, it was hard for my parents, my dad, and I think especially, felt like he was supposed to be providing for his family and having to make these really difficult choices, and here's this home that my mom got to pick out all of the things for, and now we were having to sell it, And I remember kind of throwing myself my own little pity party about all of it and went up to my room. And this was before we had finally kind of sold it. We were having, it was like the final weeks of kind of packing everything up. And I went up to my room and I sat down at my desk and I pulled open my Bible. And I'm not kidding it when I tell you that I just went like, I'm just going to read it today, which in that moment was not something I did necessarily every day, but I felt like, okay, I need to do this. This is something that I want to get in my Bible. I'm feeling, a certain type of way, and maybe God can provide me some peace and comfort. And when I opened my Bible, it fell open to John 14:1-4, and it says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you may also be where I am. You know the way to the place where I'm going." And I want to tell you, as a 16-year-old, or almost 16 at that point, I felt like God was seeing me. And you know what it means to be seen, where someone feels your pain or can understand what you're going through. And I thought, out of all of the things going on in this world, that God cares about me in this moment when I'm feeling kind of sad about this. So I knew and I felt like, okay, this is all a part of God's plan. And I was so grateful for him for providing just that little moment for me to be able to kind of anchor, anchor to in that time. So fast forwarding a little bit more, to my sophomore year in college. So I did attend Lipscomb. I can't remember if I said that already. Maybe I did. But came to Lipscomb and was studying in social work. And I'm trying to think of how to kind of even start this story. I came freshman year not knowing my roommate, and things, we hit it off really well. Freshman year was fantastic. We were best friends, did everything together. Came back as roommates again sophomore year, and something was different. And I know I'm recording, so I'm not going to say it, you know, any. But she was making some decisions at the time that I felt like were really choices that I could not agree with. And, you know, things that she was doing and how she was spending her time. And through that, and I'll say there was certain things that she began kind of deceiving me about or lying to me about, you know, where things she'd borrowed or, you know, things that would just go missing that were mine. And I later ended up needing something out of her car, found it there. So it's just kind of strange. I'd never had a friendship like that where I just felt like, ooh, you just, you know, straight out lied to me. I don't know what to do with this. And while that was kind of going on this sophomore year, I'm just going to set the stage a little bit more too to say I had my sister who had lived in Murfreesboro with her husband who was a campus minister at MTSU kind of for a time. They had just moved to Texas for him to work at Tarleton State in Stephenville as a campus minister. And so I was desperately missing my sister. We were best friends growing up. Literally, I can think of like one fight that we had over a phone, you know, back before we each had our own phone, right? I had a cousin who followed a boy to a state school in Alabama, so she left Lipscomb. A lot of my friends played soccer. They were busy with practice or training or games away, so they were all kind of out of the picture. And, you know, all of that was going on with my roommate. Another best friend of mine that I had grown up with, who was at Lipscomb at the time, was studying abroad. So it felt like a really lonely time. I was really going through this thing with my roommate who'd been a best friend, and everywhere else it felt like everybody was unavailable. And I began to wonder, like, who is dependable? And it's not even that my other friends weren't dependable. They just were in a place and season in their lives where they couldn't be around, you know. I couldn't fault them for needing to go to soccer practice, but so I remember seeing a flyer on the wall of a girl who lived kind of around the corner, and she was hosting a Bible study in her dorm room. And I thought, okay, you know, I love to try new things. I'll go. And I had admired this person. She was a year ahead of me at school. I thought, all right, I'll go to this Bible study. And so through that study, again, what kept kind of showing up was God's faithfulness and God's dependability. Even when I was looking around and saying, like, Who's dependable? And God kept saying, I am. You know, I'm here. I'm faithful. I'm dependable. And he also provided a few other friends kind of through that season where, you know, you go like, who am I going to go to lunch with? And one of a friend from one of those mission trips I'd mentioned was at Lipscomb. And we maybe didn't run in the same circle, but she saw and, hey, come on with us to lunch, you know. So God provided, even in that season, you know, some friendships that were for a time. And then as my friends came back from abroad or my soccer friends, you know, were not quite as busy, things kind of picked back up. But God reminded me, you know, of his faithfulness in that season. And I've got Psalms 145:13 here. Your kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and your dominion endures through all generations. The Lord is trustworthy in all he promises and faithful in all he does. And just again, it was another kind of reminder of God's faithfulness to me. So fast forward a few more years. I'm a senior in college. I'm wrapping up. And, you know, one of the things that I'll say about Lipscomb at that time, and I actually asked my niece this week, because she's a freshman. She's finishing up her freshman year at Lipscomb. And funny kind of story, three students over the last week have asked me to share my story with them as an assignment for one of their Bible classes. and I had just been working on this. And I was like, yes, as a matter of fact, I can share my story, you know. And one of them was my niece. So she and I were kind of talking, and I said, so this may not be the case at Lipscomb anymore, but when I was there, the joke was that women went there to get their MRS degree. And I don't know if you know what I mean when I say that. But there was a certain pressure of senior year, oh my goodness, I haven't found my mate, you know, what am I going to do? And I had dated a few people, you know, and even, in fact, had talked to this one guy that my sister knew in Texas when I had gone to visit her. And I thought, okay, this is good. We're talking on the phone. I'm getting to know him, so we'll be friends before anything else. And then he ghosted me, which, you know, if you know what that means, it means he didn't call anymore. Didn't give an explanation. So I was really, I don't want to say heartbroken, but I was in a place where I really felt like, you know, I have so much love to give. And I went to the Gulf Coast Getaway, which was a college kind of youth rally, you know, event that was held. So again, I found myself on the beach. And to me, kind of hearkening back even to that first moment I told you all about, there I was on the beach and I could hear the crashing of the waves. I knew God was faithful and loved me. But I was supposed to actually reconnect with this guy. He was going to be down at this rally, and there he was, and we were not connecting in the way I thought we were going to. So I found myself crying out to God in that moment and just saying, I have so much love to give, and I really would love to do that. I want to be, you know, a partner, and, you know, but I think what happened for me in that moment was that I gave it to God. And I said, what I'm doing isn't working. So, like, I'm done. I'm not going to try anymore. You know, I've dated, and here I even tried to date this guy that wasn't even in my state. It didn't work out. And I gave it to God. And I'm going to say I cried out to God on the beach. And this is from Psalm 143:1. Lord, hear my prayer. Listen to my cry for mercy. In your faithfulness and righteousness, come to my relief. And after that moment that I had on the beach, I really did sense this kind of calm and peace about all of that. And I will say, I know it does not happen this way for everybody, so I'm going to say weeks later was when I met my husband, you know, officially. I mean, we had met a few times on campus, but I'll say the fourth time was the charm for it to kind of stick, you know. You know, and I think what I'll say about all of that is it wasn't that I knew immediately I'd find the person, you know, or the next person I'd date, but I think for me it was relinquishing it that was what kind of did that, you know, was saying, like, God, this is yours. It's not going to be anything I can do. So actually when he asked me to go on a date, I said, I'm not looking for anything serious. And now we're married with three kids, so I don't know. I don't think it gets more serious, but... okay, and so then fast forwarding, and at this point I was 26 years old, and so this is a big part of my story, and I might have to sneak in here and get the tissues out, but I was 26 at the time, and got a call from my mom, and that my dad had passed. So he was 63, and she had come home and found him, and he had had a sudden heart attack. And, you know, I was a young person, he was a young person, you know, and I think, you know, that was a really hard time. That was a really hard time, feeling like coming back to work, nobody understands, you know. Maybe a few people said something, but I was shocked at how many people just didn't say anything. And they just went about going on. I wanted to say, don't you know what happened to me? You know, don't you know my dad just died? But what I saw in that and what I witnessed, you know, in terms of my family and my mom, my siblings, was God's comfort and peace. And I think that, and when you hear about the peace that passes all understanding, you go, there's no way to make peace out of that. There's no reason to have hope unless you have Jesus and if you have God. So for me, this one really relates to Psalms 23, 4, verse 4. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, or we also know it as the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And that in that time, God saw us and he provided us with comfort that we found in each other and sharing his stories and other ways that he provided for us that we've been able to kind of look back and see. You know, for example, his birthday was just days prior, and we had all spoken to him on his birthday and had wonderful, meaningful conversation. I had just been home at Thanksgiving, where that was one of our early married Thanksgivings, and we were back and forth about whose family we were going to go to. You know, well, I thank goodness mine won out on that one. I don't know, my Josh will say, I'm so glad we went to Atlanta that Thanksgiving, you know. But I saw that comfort that God was providing to us. And for those of you that don't know, so I'm involved with the Grief Share Ministry here now. And part of that is because I saw the way that it helped my mom. About 3 years after he passed, she went to her church and said, I've got to know about my grief. I want to know where I am. And in fact, at that point, we thought it was kind of these stages of grief. You know, we didn't really know that it's more of a tangled ball of emotions, and there's a path that's kind of winding, and it might be two steps forward and one step back, you know. But she got connected with Grief Share, and then I got connected with it at my previous church, and then now I'm able to be connected here with it at Otter Creek. So part of that comfort that I received and being a part of Grief Share too is that the comfort that I've been given that I'm able to give to others, and I'm just so grateful for that, to see God using that painful kind of part of my journey to help other people. And this passage that I want to say has provided me probably some of the most comfort as I think about my dad and my grief. And it comes from 1 Thessalonians 4:13 through 18, and it says, brothers and sisters, we do not want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death, so that you do not grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. For we believe that Jesus died and rose again, so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. According to the Lord's word, will certainly not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will be with the Lord forever. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. So I love to think about that because, you know, as I've, and we, I mean, now it's almost, it'll be 18 years. So it's been a long time. But I still miss my dad, you know, and I still come back to this passage and think I'll get to see him again one day and that I have hope because of Jesus. So that was 2006 when that happened. So fast forwarding, and I told you about Mackenzie, my youngest, and when she was born, at one of our very early pediatrician appointments, you know, they make you come all the time. You feel like you might as well just live, like at the pediatrician's office. The pediatrician found a heart murmur. And so she was listening to her heart, and she said, well, she's got a heart murmur. And the same thing happened with our middle son, and we went to a specialist, and it was nothing. So I was convinced, we'll go to the specialist, it'll be nothing. And so we went to the specialist, and it was something. So it was still there, and they were able to confirm. They did a little ultrasound on her heart while we were there at the hospital. And I can't remember what the exact percentage was, but it was in the high 90s of a percentage of chance that it would close on its own by 3 months. So we were like, okay, this is reassuring. The doctor says babies sometimes can be born with this hole in their heart, and then it will close on its own, you know, here soon. So we left the appointment. I thought, okay, it'll close on its own. And we went about our business. And then we went for the follow-up, and it was not closed on its own. And I remember feeling devastated. Because at that point, then, the doctor started talking about, open heart surgery when she's 3 years old, and she'll have to go under, and this and that and the other. And I was like, I thought it wasn't even going to be a thing when we came to the first appointment. Now here we're back. You said it was a 97% chance, something. It was really a strong chance that it was going to have closed on its own, and it didn't. And then she threw out, and I don't remember the statistics exactly, but if it had not closed at this point on its own, the chances of it closing on its own were like slim to none. I mean, it was like, we're pretty much going to have to just look towards surgery, but come back again, you know. And at that point, it was probably closer to a year. I can't remember exactly the time in between the appointments, but I remember feeling like, okay, this other time, like, I did not go to God at all with it. I just thought, science says it'll close on its own, so it's gonna close, you know. And I wasn't really worried about it. And then now I'm going, okay. And I didn't want to worry about it, I didn't want to be anxious about it. But I was begging God, please close this hole. Please close this hole. And I'd lay her in bed and I'd say, God, please close the hole, you know. And I remember talking to my mom on the phone, and she said, well, you know, Autumn, sometimes God uses the doctors to close the hole. And I said, I want God to close the hole. Like, I just want him to close the hole. And so, you know, here we are. We went back to the specialist, and I'm going to tell you that he closed the hole. And the doctor was shocked because, again, she had told us the chances of that happening at that point were so small. And I said, I think God went in there and literally stitched it up. I mean, it was a tiny hole anyway, but big enough that they were concerned about it, right? But it closed, and now we don't even have to say, she has a heart murmur. You know, I said, do I need to put in her physical when she's going into school? You know, no, you don't even need to say she has a murmur. So praise God, you know, and in a way. And I think what I learned from that kind of moment was I needed to draw near to God, and I needed to see him do that in a way that was undeniably him. And so for that one, I'm going to recall James 4:8. I'll say, come near to God and he will come near to you. Because I did draw close to him and he was there because he's faithful, but he drew close to me too. And then the last one I'll say, so this is fast forwarding. Yeah, I think I'm all right on time. Okay. Yay. When I talked with the three students, we went on and on and on. So I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to really kind of trim this down for class. Part of being involved in Grief Share, we watch this video series. It's a 13-week series that we do. We meet in the fall and in the spring, kind of each semester, take the summers off because we have to do some self-care. You know, you can't pour from an empty cup. But they've redone the videos recently, so they were on version 4 now. And so last fall, we were watching kind of the new series of Grief Share. And part of that is kind of leading the team is saying, like, okay, I'm going to watch the videos before we're showing them in the group. So I was really like, and doing the new workbook, I was like consuming the content all over again. And there was this kind of 3-week part where they focused on guilt and anger and resentment. And while my grief journey started a long time ago, 2006, so here we are really almost 20 years away from it, you know, in a couple of years. But that series resonated with me in other areas of my life. And ways that through the mundane kind of tasks of life and the going through the motions of all of the things that we have going on, I found myself to be building up anger and resentment. And just the little things, and I'm like, oh my goodness, why are the kids not loading the dishwasher? Why are they leaving all the things for me in the sink? Silly things like that, right? But I was letting it take root, and I was feeding it, and I loved to tend to it and talk to myself about how awful it was that they were treating me that way when really it was they were just trying to make the bus for school and couldn't get, you know. So instead of being curious, oh, wonder why that happened, or let me talk to them about it, I was going, oh, I know, they just left it for me to do, you know. And not, that's just one example. But in other areas, you know, where I was, and it comes out sideways if I don't, you know, when I'm not dealing with it, if I'm not talking to the person that I'm having a, you know, challenge with, it, I would be snarky or snide, you know, let that passive aggressive, you know, instead of, you know, let's talk about this and how can we do this better? And so I want to say in one of the videos in particular, they talked about a book bag and that we have this book bag that we wear. And as we're kind of going along, and of course the journey they're talking about is grief, but I'm just in the larger context of life, I'm angry about this and I'm going to pick up this stone and I'm putting it in my book bag. Ooh, I'm really upset that person said that. I've got this stone now and I'm going to put it in my book bag. And maybe we carry a few stones around and we can, but I was filling my book bag and I had spent years filling my book bag of, well, they didn't do this or they said that or they should have done, you know, planking, I mean, the wood beam in my own eye, probably knocking everybody over too instead of the, you know, speck in theirs. I wanted to pull that out, but not necessarily look at my own. And so a couple of passages that I'm going to kind of pull from here, but what I want to say is there was a video and it talked about giving the book bag over to Jesus. And this to me is like a freedom prayer kind of connection, although I have not actually done a freedom prayer. I was a part of a First Freedoms class that was offered last year, and the author of the book came and led one of our class sessions and guided us through Psalm 23. And I just remember the imagery and being able to connect in my mind that way was so helpful for me. So I thought, okay, I like this. I'm gonna capture this. And I'm wearing this book bag, and I am going to give it to Jesus. And I'm going to tell you, the load of that book bag, I physically felt lighter when I imagined in my mind handing Jesus all of this anger and resentment and bitterness that I was letting, you know, take up valuable real estate space in my heart and my mind. And there are still days where I have to go like, whoop, that's a stone I don't want to carry. Jesus, you know, can I put this in your book bag you're carrying for me? And he's there to say, yes, I want to carry that for you. And then my yoke is easy because I'm taking his yoke. He's got my heavy burden, right? So Revelation 1:5 says, and from Jesus Christ, who is the faithful witness, the firstborn from the dead, and the ruler of the kings of the earth. And I want to say, even though I have had an easy faith kind of growing up and all my life I've believed, I've never felt like I really needed Jesus more until last fall when I gave him that heavy book bag. And feeling like, I think for a long time I thought, I'm like a pretty good person. I mean, I'm a social worker, you know, I'm helping people and I go to church and I believe and, you know. But I think I always thought, like, I'm doing pretty good. Like, I'm, you know, I'm not making any real bad choices. But also connecting it to some of the work that my students are doing. They spend over 500 hours their senior year in a practicum setting. And to just talk about Sydney alone has been with Yolanda in Mending Hearts rehab for substance misuse. So hearing some of those stories and to think, you know, I've always thought, oh, my sin isn't so bad, you know, but to know that my sin is just the same as anyone else's sin. And the worst sins I can think of, my sins are still in need of Jesus. I think for the first time in my life, I actually like really felt that and believed that I cannot do this on my own. And I'm so thankful that he has given me that Ebenezer stone as well. And so in 1 John 1:8-9, and I'll wrap it up with one more passage after that. If we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just and will forgive us our sins and purify us from all unrighteousness. And I felt that. I felt God cleansing me from the anger and kind of bitterness that I was harboring. And that I mentioned every day, I kind of have to do this, right? So he says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. It is good to wait quietly, for the salvation of the Lord is good for a man to bear the yoke while he is young. Lamentations 3, 22 through 27. So as I kind of look back on those seven moments, really right now, which I'm like, oh, that's such like the perfect number, right? Seven to end this with. I'm sure there will be more moments in my life where I'm able to look back and see kind of that thread of God's faithfulness and kind of lands me to where I am today, able to say that he is faithful and he is dependable. And I'm so grateful for that. So thank you so much for letting me come and for being a generous audience. I'm looking around and seeing so many smiling faces. So thank you.
Thank you.